The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Welcome to the podcast. We're going to be on tour this week, Friday and Saturday in Orlando on Saturday, Tampa on Friday. Go to glenbeck.com/tours. If you're a real American, if you're not a communist, if you're not a terrorist,
you'll be there.
You'll be there. You know, look, we've seen there have been a lot of bad human beings in history. Don't be one of them. Go to the tour.
You don't want to be Hitler.
No, you went as far as you could go.
I mean, that's what Ocasio-Cortez said that just the other day. Yeah. If you don't go to the Glenn Beck program, it's like you're shoving Jews into the ovens of the Holocaust. That's what she said.
I didn't hear that quote.
Or maybe that was on the border.
Oh,
I think it was
right.
on the border.
That's what she
said. You don't let them in, it's like that. Well, same difference. If you don't like the migrants on the border...
That's you. We talked about the migrants on the border today quite a bit. We had Ami Horowitz on, who went to the border. Unlike it seems like a lot of these reporters who are telling us what's going on.
Well, no, they are. They're just turning the cameras away from where the actual news is.
Yeah.
And who's organizing it.
He exposes who's organized and interviews a couple dozen people, at least that I saw, about why they're there. None of them actually are talking about asylum, which is amazing.
We also played a clip that you really have to hear. It's two pieces. One is what happened on the border, according to CBS 8 in San Diego. Their cameras were there. But it's really important that you hear and share these two clips because it tells you everything you need to know. And you'll ask yourself, why didn't I know about that?
We have some new stuff on the Asia Bibi story with Matthew Continetti from the Washington Free Beacon.
And you are on the winning side, all of that, on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Wednesday, November 28th.
Patriot Mobile is a phone service that will give you all of the great coverage that you want. They're just not going to take the money from you and then invest that in causes that you don't believe in, like Planned Parenthood. Patriot Mobile actually is going to let you invest your money into the causes that you believe in. But most of these cell companies, they give all kinds of money to crazy, crazy causes that you work hard against.
It's true. Why do that? You can go with Patriot Mobile. They were created to solve that problem. They're the only conservative cell phone company in America. Go to patriotmobile.com/blaze. Get started today. When you use the offer code blaze, they're going to waive the activation fee for up to two lines. patriotmobile.com/blaze or 1-800-A-PATRIOT is the place to go.
Glenn Beck.
You know, yesterday I was talking to you a little bit about the refugees, otherwise known as the caravan. And I was talking about how you really have to have some consistency. If you want to make your point, you have to be consistent. And there's all this talk about refugees and asylum. The left and the mainstream media has used this as one of their, you know, flagship torches to criticize Trump and his border policies. But it falls apart. It falls apart because you know that it's not real. You know that it's not real. Internally, you know that it's not real. How? Well, they've been talking about the caravans coming up from South America. The New York Times, the Daily Podcast, compared the plight of South American refugees to that of Jews being turned away during World War II by FDR. Now, they didn't mention that it was the progressives and FDR that turned that ship around, but I wouldn't expect them to say that. Even Beto wrote a piece that on how he would deal with the situation, and put on your shocked face. He's reportedly reconsidering about his run for presidency. I know. Crazy. Shock. But can you seriously compare the Jews that were facing Nazis to those in the migrant caravan? Can you compare the migrant caravan to those who were escaping Cuba and Castro? Well, the New York Times did. Now, filmmaker Ami Horowitz just released a video of his experience where he was embedded with the caravan, and he asked people point blank, why have you come? Every single one of them said that they were coming for economic reasons or for education. Now, consider this. Mercury One and this audience has helped relocate over 15,000 Christian refugees, the people who are literally being chased out of their town if they do not submit to Allah. Otherwise, if they don't escape, they are beheaded or crucified. We have helped 15,000. It's like 15,680 something. In this year alone, we have helped those refugees. Now, not one family, one person has been allowed into the United States. One. Now, where's the left and the media's outrage? These are actual refugees. These are people that we have seen on television set on fire in cages, and they don't seem to care. Why? They have this outrage and this broken heart for a group of mainly men. Now, NBC is even reporting. I can't believe the guy's still on the air. Mainly men coming here for jobs and education, but they will not lift a finger. They will not carry a story about Asia Bibi or the Christians that are being saved and the Christians that are being killed all over the world. Why? Because a group of people wanted to make more money and to be able to go shopping or have an education, most likely a free education on the back of the taxpayers here? We're not talking about the actual plight of endangered refugees, people that need asylum as a matter of life and death. Now, it will be easy for the media to say, oh, really, Glenn? Well, what about you're only talking about them because they're Christians? No, I have also been talking to you about the Uyghurs. I've been talking about the million Muslims that have been rounded up in China. And I have been warning. What China is going into now is some of the darkest stuff that we have ever seen as humans. 2 million Muslims are now being detained in China in re-education camps. Now, these re-education camps are concentration camps. Make no mistake, these are not conspiracy theories. You can see them on satellite photos. 2 million people have been disappeared. A member of the Chinese Muslim minority spoke in Washington yesterday. Did you see this? Did anybody see this in the news? Is anyone leading with this story today? You know, we're in a trade war right now with China. It is actually affecting our farmers. Our farmers are plowing their fields under because they couldn't sell their crops because we're in a trade war with China. We have a president who is talking about trade wars, and we have China talking about an actual hot war if those things go through. So you would think that there is enough here to talk about China, to look for stories about China. But here is somebody who was actually in one of the re-education concentration camps. She escaped, and she was in our country yesterday trying to talk to the press and trying to talk to political leaders about her experiences. Now, I want to bring this to you, because it is what we should be talking about. Have you ever seen the movie V for Vendetta with Natalie Portman? Her character is tortured by the protagonist to show what the government's re-education experience actually looks like. It is almost, what this woman described in Washington is almost as if the Chinese watched that movie and then said, you know what, let's apply this, but can we make it a little darker? After she was arrested, she had her head shaved and she was interrogated for 4 straight days with no sleep. She was then forced to abandon her native language, her religion, and her cultural practices. Every day she was forced to memorize and sing songs praising the Communist Party. Then she was given electroshock. She was given electroshock treatment until she foamed at the mouth and passed out. And the last phrase she heard before going unconscious was, "Being a Uyghur is a crime." This is happening now on a grand scale. 2 million people are going through this. I want to make sure that you understand they're Muslims. But I didn't say 2 million Muslims. I said 2 million people are going through this. Now, what I just described is the lighter part of her detention and training. She was then forced to take mysterious pills. She didn't know what they did. She still doesn't. And she was forced to drink a white liquid. Now, this caused bleeding from everywhere, but stopped her menstruation process. Are they forcibly sterilizing people? Is this what is happening? 2 million people are in these camps. Now I ask you, why haven't we heard this story on the news today? She was in our country. She was talking about a country that we are currently trying to decide what do we do on trade with that country. We are currently having a conversation about, oh, well, China is the new model. That's what you will hear from leaders all over the world. That's the new model, is it? Is that the new model? Is this the model we want? While we are talking about socialism, communism, totalitarianism, this is what communism looks like. As our kids are being indoctrinated that communism wasn't so bad, that socialism isn't so bad. Well, they didn't grow up during the Cold War. No, they're growing up right now where 2 million people are being tortured. And we're talking about, I'm sorry, the refugees on the border? The refugees that broke through the gates and the walls of Mexico, the ones that the Mexicans are saying are invaders and we don't want them here, and the ones who are trying to break into our border and say they don't care about our laws. We're talking about those people instead of the people who are currently being crucified, being set on fire, or are in re-education camps in China. You see, when you see the news, they've gone so far off the rails that nothing rings true anymore. There is no righteous indignation that you could possibly drum up on what's happening on our border right now. There is no righteous indignation. Because maybe there are a few people, but as NBC is reporting, the vast majority do not have a case for refugee status or asylum. Maybe some of the women and children. Maybe. But this is all about politics. This is all about politics and control. That's all it's about. You will have so much credibility when you don't make it about politics. I don't care if it's President Obama or President Trump. What's happening in the world is wrong right now. We're not talking about the right things. We're not focused on, well, let me just leave it at this. If you're struggling, I don't know if there is a God. Where is God? You're not going to find him in this fight. You're not going to find him in this political fight in Washington. You're not going to find him. Because that's all bogus political struggle. The struggles they're talking about now, have you seen the STEM scores? Women are now equal in all STEM graduation diplomas. And in some cases, more than equal. That's not a real plight. all women and education and that's not a real plight. That's not plight. That's not real. So you won't find God on those fake things. You will find God in the midst of human suffering. Let's find God. Let's concentrate on actual human suffering.
It's Wednesday, November 28th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Is it incredible that this woman came to Washington yesterday to tell her story? Have you heard that story anywhere?
No, I've not heard it at all.
This affects everything. Amnesty International. You know, Amnesty International has come out against Google. Did you hear that story? Yesterday, Amnesty International came out along with the Google employees and said, you've got to stop Dragonfly. Stop participating in Dragonfly. Now, when I say that, what do most people think?
I mean,
what's Dragonfly?
Yeah, probably.
What's what Dragonfly?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what Dragonfly is. Dragonfly is Google's partnership with China for complete monitoring and filtering of the internet and spying on people. You do a Google search? Great. What is the Google search? What are they searching for? What is their online? Give me the metadata. But I want to know. I want names connected to everything. Dragonfly is helping them round people up in their nice little re-education camps. Amnesty International yesterday sided with the Google employees and said, this has got to stop. Google, what are you doing? Stop it. You are hurting actual human beings. For what? For money? You're on the winning side. If you feel like I do, you're on the winning side. History will remember you as somebody who stood up. You're on the winning side. Let me give you another story. Minority Report seems to be coming to life. The West Midlands Police in the metropolitan county of West Midlands in England has now begun and launched their pre-crime software called the National Data Analytics Solution. I love things when they have national and solution in the title. I love that.
Always works.
Always works.
Five-year plans.
It uses a blend of AI, citywide smart cameras, and statistics to evaluate the risk of someone committing or becoming a victim of violent crime. We are now looking at, as the Alan Turing Institute says, serious ethical issues. It may be good intentioned, but is this right to do? To start to round people up to stop them from crime that they have not committed.
Is that really what they're suggesting?
Yes.
I mean, because there's stuff called predictive policing, which has helped fight crime rates quite a bit. In which, you know, certain areas they know are high crime, they set police officers in before the crimes occur, things like that, which actually have been effective in the United States. That's different, though, than rounding somebody up before they've committed a crime.
They have 1,400 potential indicators for crime, including 30 important ones, they say. Machine learning algorithms then take the data points, and they learn how to detect crime while analyzing video from smart cameras. Now, this is predictive policing. However, they are identifying and sniffing out already known criminals and those who look like they may be on the road to becoming a criminal and divert them with therapeutic interventions.
Hmm. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Therapeutic interventions.
Yes. With support from local health or social workers. So you may have to go to the hospital. You may need to have some psychiatric help. You know what? We have a re-education center for you. This is not good.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
I don't know if you read the Washington Free Beacon, but it is something you should read every single day. It's really tremendous in its coverage. It gives you real depth and real stories and truth, at least the way I view it. The editor-in-chief of the Washington Free Beacon is Matthew Continetti, and he wrote a story called Asia Bibi and the First Freedom. And I read it over the holiday, and I wanted to talk to Matthew because he is absolutely right on this. It's a little bit of a history lesson, but it is also really important that instead of talking about refugees that are coming here because they want, you know, free education in the United States, we're talking about refugees that are actually in danger, that we're not helping, and God only knows why. Matthew, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
You bet. So talk to me a little bit about Asia Bibi.
Sure. Asia Bibi is a 55-year-old Pakistani woman. She's a mother of five, and she's a practicing Catholic. About 8 years ago, she got into a dispute with some of her coworkers in her rural village in Pakistan over basically sharing a pitcher of water. And in the course of that argument, she made some sarcastic comments about Muhammad, the prophet of Islam. And because of those comments, she was accused and found guilty of blasphemy. And she was imprisoned and put on death row until just last October, when the Pakistani Supreme Court finally said that there was no evidence for this charge and acquitted her. But the story doesn't end there, Glenn. She's been in hiding ever since because the reaction among the Islamic fundamentalists in Pakistan has been so severe it's led to riots, death threats. She's been in hiding, her family in hiding, as her lawyer is attempting to find some Western government to secure her freedom. And so, unfortunately, that hasn't happened yet.
Okay, so can you give me any insight at all beside extreme cowardice or the loss of the West of why this isn't happening? I mean, the statement from the UK is, you know, there are elements that, you know, might cause problems. And so we're not going to bring her in. Basically, what they were saying was we're afraid of our own population that is Muslim because they might rise up and cause all kinds of problems here. So we got to not do the right thing here. So yeah. can you tell me, besides cowardice or loss of the West, why she's not been accepted someplace?
Those are two pretty compelling reasons. I'd say maybe the third reason could be, and it's hard to get the facts here, especially reporting from Washington, since her lawyer has been in Europe for the past several weeks. And in fact, when he arrived in Europe, there in the Netherlands, there were riots there. And so just proving what you were saying,
wow,
that a lot of Islamic fundamentalists who live in Europe are just as potentially violent as the ones in Pakistan. It may be that her team is trying to get others out as well. And so that might be some complication, but really, I don't know. I know that Senator Rand Paul has raised this issue with the president, and unfortunately, though, there's been no other signs of activity on the part of the White House to get Asia Bibi out. I know also that Canada is looking into this, and Australia as well. So I still hold hope that she and her family might be able to escape what is a dire situation in Pakistan, but we really just don't know at this point.
Talking to Matthew Continetti of the Free Beacon, freebeacon.com, a paper or a site that you should visit every day and read about Asia Bibi. So it concerns me a great deal that the United States, here we have a Catholic who is, whose only crime is, I won't convert to Islam. I won't. That's, if you read the decision from the Supreme Court in Pakistan, they were very clear that this was a travesty of justice 9 years ago. And we're not stepping to the plate. We should be the first. Is there any idea of why it's not happening here? Why isn't anyone in the administration all of a sudden just rising up and saying, this is a great way to show, here's the real plight of somebody who needs a refuge, and the difference between her and what's happening on the border?
You're right. I mean, offering her asylum would do exactly that. It would say, you know, we are resisting the legal entry of the caravans from Central America, but that does not mean the United States is opposed to people truly deserving of refugee and asylum, and she is one of them. Again, it's just unclear why the United States has been relatively lax. This would also, by the way, it would show that the Trump administration is standing up for,
yes,
you know, basic freedoms, the freedom to practice your religion, the freedom of speech, at a time when it's coming under criticism for, you know, its, reasoned stance toward our alliance with Saudi Arabia, despite this killing of this journalist. But granting Asia Bibi asylum would say, look, we still, even though we're making this compromise with the Saudis, we are still going and protecting the freedom of this Catholic woman, Asia Bibi.
And what's interesting to me is you talk about the importance of religion as the first freedom. Can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, reflecting on this case at a time of our national Thanksgiving made me just remember how important religious freedom is to this country and to the world. And in fact, I do believe it is the first freedom. America was built on religious dissenters. Many of the original colonies were founded by people who were fleeing some sort of religious oppression. And you see in all of our founding documents the importance of religion and morality, and the idea that America has is a place where people can work out their relations with God unafraid of civil repression. And so a case like Asia Bibi brings us all into relief. You know, we've, for the past half century in America, we've been having this debate over the place of religion in public life. And unfortunately, in my view, believers have been kind of backed into a corner. But when we have power, and we do have political power today, I think we should use it to reaffirm America's freedoms, and especially this one, and by showing that America is a place for freedom of religion and freedom of speech. And so that's why this case is important. And I also say, too, Glenn, in the column, that why is religious freedom the first freedom? It's because it contains all of the other freedoms within it, right? I mean, to practice your religion freely, you need also to have the right to associate, right? So you need to have the right to meet with your co-religionists. You need to have the freedom of speech, because how else are you going to engage in your religion or spread the word if you happen to belong to a proselytizing faith? And you also, it implies in it a limited government, because once you assert the religious freedom, you then basically make the demand that this is an area where government will not be able to interfere. And so you kind of get into the foundations of our Constitution. So this is truly an important part of the American experience, and I think we've done a good job communicating that to people over the years, but we can always do more.
Matthew, one last question. The woman, the Uyghur that came in from China that was horribly tortured in one of these concentration camps where now 2 million people are being held in China. She went yesterday to Washington to try to get people to pay attention. You're not finding this anywhere. Here's another religious minority that is being wiped out. I mean, it is genocide, attempted genocide in China. Why is it nobody's talking about that?
You know, I think Sam Brownback, former senator from a former governor, who's now in charge of our Commission on Religious Freedom, is trying to draw some attention to this. I do believe Marco Rubio, on his Twitter feed in particular, talks a lot about this chilling system of repression within China. China is one of the leading forces of religious oppression in the world today. And it's not just Muslims and the Uyghurs in the Western provinces are Muslims. It's also Christians. And we need to spend a lot of time talking about that, too, because it's this arrangement that the government has made with the Catholic Church, but also, of course, the Protestant churches are under threat in China as well. So, again, and this goes into a larger question. You're absolutely right. I fear that the administration is not using one of the most important tools in its disposal, and that is its advocacy of human freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that the United States has stood for in our relations with the rest of the world. Now,
it's the way we collapsed the Soviet Union. I mean, part of the main reasons.
Right. Yeah, absolutely right. And we used religious freedom in particular.
Yes.
This doesn't mean that we're kind of woolly-headed utopian thinkers, right? It doesn't mean that we believe that human rights extend to, you know, the right to a job or the right to single-payer health care. It means that we believe in the basic rights, the right to practice your religion, the right to exercise your conscience. These are the foundations of our Western civilization. And it's the way, as you say, Ronald Reagan won the Cold War. So I pray that one day Donald Trump will recognize that he has these tools at his disposal as he confronts China, as he confronts repressive Islamic states like Iran and indeed, in some cases, Pakistan.
Matthew, thank you very much. You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Ami Horowitz joins us now, and I don't know if this is true, from Beirut?
Yes. I'm doing a video on the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, this came back yesterday. I was in the Hezbollah-controlled Bekaa Valley, the shadow of the Syrian mountains. So, yeah, I try to keep life a little bit interesting, Glenn.
You didn't tell them your last name was Horowitz, did you?
No, I...
Good.
I use a nom de guerre.
Yeah, okay, because that doesn't sound like a safe area. Come back safely. We'll pray for you.
That would not end well for me.
No, it wouldn't. Okay, so Ami, tell me about what you learned on the border and how difficult it was to find out the truth.
Right, okay. God, there's so many layers to this onion, it's almost hard to know where to begin. I think the important thing, the most important point, or one of the most important points, I think, is the complicity that the mainstream media has with the organizers of this caravan. And I don't mean to say that they had some kind of like cabal that they worked on together. What I mean by that is look at every image that you see on CNN or MSNBC or the New York Times, the Washington Post, any image or video that you see about the caravan, what's the one thing you always see? You always see women and kids, right, in the framing. And it's so ludicrous because you'd have to sit there for a while to find that framing because there are so few women and children. Literally, I would say 90 to 95% people there are men. And you can go on and on about how disingenuous the media is on this thing. For example, the media will have you believe this was some kind of organic, a groundswell of people who decided at the same time in Honduras, we're going to go form this caravan and go to America. That's kind of like, that's what's the narrative that you hear from the media. Again, nothing could be further from the truth. This thing was organized from the beginning. Glenn, I can't tell you. There are literally lines of these chartered buses that take people from place to place. There's mobile hospitals. There's armies of trucks and vehicles moving food and people.
There
and
would
water.
Have to be. This is the question I've been asking from the beginning. You cannot set out Who's just taking care of the people who are... That's a death march. In any other case, that's a death march unless you have medical services, you have food, you have water. You can't just walk into a town with 6,000 people and all stop by in the 7-Eleven and expect them to have enough water. Of course this is going on. So when you found it, Ami, you found Pueblo Sin Fronteras, which is a group that organized the last caravan and gets money from George Soros. How involved are they?
Oh, as involved as you can put it, this is their caravan. This is their, they're the sponsors, they're the organizers, they're the ones who put this whole thing together. Listen, you walk around, this is not a secret. It's not like I found something that nobody else could find. If you just show up with a camera, this is what is out there, so it's laid out for you. There are hundreds of these workers. It's not like there's one or two kind of hiding in the bushes. They're all over the place. They're wearing T-shirts that say Fronteras. They're wearing colored vests and have these bullhorns. Okay? You can't throw a rock and not hit one of these people. They are organizing it from the beginning to the end, and the cost of this thing, Glenn, it's got to be in the millions of dollars. Not thousands of dollars, not hundreds of thousands, millions. I calculated just the water costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, never mind everything else. There are literally mobile hospitals. If you, in the video, you see four or five of these caravan trucks that are kind of parked and that move with them from place to place, where you have loads of medication. There are doctors. There are hospital beds. It's unbelievable how clear this thing was organized, created from the beginning.
Did you ask anybody where they were getting the money and how this was all organized and put together?
Of course. And their answer was, oh, manna from heaven. It just appeared. With a straight face, they will tell me that there was no money involved and that everything that they have is given to them by the towns when they're passing through. So the pallets, literally the pallets of Gatorade, right, of electrolytes that are given to them, the trucks full of water are apparently given to them by the 3,000 or 4,000 people that happen to live in those little towns they're passing through in southern Oaxaca. I mean, it's so incredulous. That it's incredible that they expect me or you or everybody who's listening to the CNN or reading the New York Times would believe this hogwash.
So, Ami, I've come to a place to where this is so. This is so bold of the press, and I don't think it's going to work. This is so bold of the press. They're actually asking Americans to believe this stuff when it's so clearly not true. It's to the point to where you have to deny what you see with your own eyes.
And this is the great shame of most of the American media. That the world media, but we're talking about the American media in particular right now. Shame is maybe too soft a word. They're literally trying to push a political narrative here. It goes a little deeper, but why, let's go take a step back. Why are they doing this? Why is Pueblo Sin Fronteras funding this, or why do they want to do this? The answer is very, very clear. They have a hatred for American sovereignty. They have a hatred for our president. And by the way, this also preceded the president as well. They've had caravans before.
Mm-hmm.
And they hate our border security. They're trying to undermine American sovereignty.
They believe in a borderless world. That's what they say.
Well, listen, the name of the group is Pueblos Sin Fronteras, Peoples Without Borders. It's in the name, man.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they're hiding their agenda.
Right.
But it's the fact that the American media is covering this up, and literally covering this up and papering up, because there's literally no way you can go there and not see this in front of your face. It's everywhere. This is not hidden. It's not like you have to scratch the surface to find what the agenda is. This is all the stuff is out there for them to see, but none of them are reporting on it. It's bizarre, and it really just shows a level of, I don't know what else word to use other than complicity. It's really what it is.
So, Ami, we just played a report from 2013 from the same border position where the reporters were talking to the border guards, and there had been a tear gas event under Obama that nobody seemed to care about. And they were talking about how at the time that this was a coordinated event, and they felt that it was almost like a dry run. They had tried it in a couple of other places, and they were trying to make the Border Patrol look bad. And they said, this is an organized group, and this is what they're trying to do, and, you know, they're going to do this in the future. Nobody really paid attention to that. When I saw the caravan in April, I said at the time, this is going to be, if we are not prepared and we don't handle this right, this is going to make our southern border into Gaza. And this will be, we will be the big bad Israel, and anybody who wants to come in is going to be a Palestinian. And that's the playbook. You agree with that?
That's a really apt analogy. The concerted effort to make like the media was able to do to make Israel look like the big ogre, using the same kind of playbook. They're doing the same thing here. By the way, I want to point out, I mean, it wasn't one time that the Obama administration used tear gas. They used tear gas multiple times.
I want to correct you. I want to use the real number. 1,600 times. 16. That's the real number.
Right.
Six. It is 1,600 incidences of using tear gas, pepper balls, and stun guns.
Yeah, how many times did you hear that on CNN?
Never.
I'm just curious. Wondering how many times that fact came out, or the New York Times.
Never. In fact,
you're exactly right. In fact,
on this particular thing that happened in 2013, they had only 100 people, and they were being reported. They reported it as the border guards were so restrained, they only used tear gas, pepper balls, and stun guns. Tasers. They only use those, and how restrained they were.
I mean, it's really incredible, and also another analogy. You mentioned the fact they're looking for kind of weakness on how they can get these people across. A couple of things. First of all, I've seen this movie before, and that was when you saw, and I was with the refugees, the migrants. They call them migrants, who were trying to get from Jordan and Turkey into Europe, right? Mm-hmm. So we've seen what happens when you open up your borders and say, we'll take in whoever you want. You see a massive demographic shift happening all across Europe. I did a video about what the results were happening, the results of this mass immigration to Sweden that we had talked about.
It's destroyed it.
You saw what happened. Yeah, you saw what happened there, and this is what they're trying to recreate here. Now, I'm not saying that the people in these caravans are bad people. Now, there are absolutely bad people within the caravan. That's not even a question. In fact, one of the more interesting people I interviewed was a group of trans who were understandably looking to leave their intolerant society in Honduras and come to America. I'd do the same thing if I were them. If I had nothing, I'd also want to come to America. I don't blame them for that.
Right.
But they were telling me how they were beaten repeatedly by people in the caravan all the way to America, but they're willing to endure it because they want to get to America so badly. There were people who admitted, no, there are some bad people in these groups, but I don't want to make it seem like they're all bad people. They're doing something which I would want to do as well if I were them, but they have to understand that we have, without our border, we don't have sovereignty. We're not a nation. We're not a nation state. And if you want to be a sovereign functioning nation state, the number one thing you need is a border, and you have to have a secure border. And I want to point something else out as well. Part of the plan on how, this is on video, they're telling me this. Part of what the groups are doing, and the UN, by the way, is very complicit in this as well. I interviewed a UN official from UN High Commission Refugees who was telling me proudly that they were involved in helping to organize the caravan once they crossed the border into Mexico. They were involved from the beginning, she said, in helping them facilitate their crossing across Mexico. And when I talked to the leaders, the organizers of this caravan, what they were telling me was, we are teaching them a number of things. First of all, they literally had PowerPoint presentation. I kid you not, like a caravan TED talk. where they're training them exactly what to say to American guards in order to have a higher chance for getting asylum status. They're teaching them how to game the system. It's a very sophisticated effort.
Ami, I pray that you stay safe and that you continue to do the work that you're doing. You can follow him at Ami, A-M-I, Horowitz, or go to AmiHorowitz.com. This is a must-see video, and you need to share it with as many people as you can. This is the truth, and it is there for you to see. All you have to do is turn the cameras in the right direction. What you're seeing is a very well orchestrated play, and it does spell a new phase of America's destruction if we allow it to win. I'm telling you, our Mexican border will become Gaza. It will become a refugee haven, and we will be the big bad Israel. It is coming unless we stop it dead in its tracks now. And we do it the right way. Ami, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
This is Moby Dick as if written.
Moby Dick as written by Bernie Sanders.
By Bernie Sanders.
Call me Ishmael. Some years ago, never mind how long precisely. Having little or no money in my purse because of the stagnant middle class being devoured alive by evil plutocrats like Bill Gates and the Koch brothers, both of them, I thought I would sail about a little and see a watery part of the world. It is a way I have of driving off the spleen and regulating the circulation. That's actual Herman Melville.
You can kind of tell when you go in and out of it.
Yeah. In my travels, which I did in a single crumpled suit, I encountered Captain Ahab, a man determined to harpoon Moby Dick, the white whale. Whales are the top 1% of the top 1% of the ocean. There is no good reason for tuna to be smaller than whales. When you look at charts of tuna and charts of whales and also charts of squirrels over the last 40 years, whales are getting bigger and tuna is staying the same or shrinking. In Denmark, tuna gets as big as a Ford Contour. And whales in Denmark are only slightly larger than a respectably sized special needs bus. There's a lot we can learn from Denmark. Ahab looked out across the briny sea, which is the boneyard and watery charnel house of so many New England whalers. All ye mastheaders have before ye now seen me give orders about a white whale, he said. Look ye, do ye see the Spanish ounce of gold? Holding up a bright, bold coin to the sun, it is a $16 piece, men. Do you see it, Mr. Starbuck? Hand me yon top mall.
That's more Melville.
No, exactly.
Can you tell
that? I think we know that.
He proceeded to hammer it into the mast. Whoever sights the dreaded white whale gets the gold piece. A $16 piece of Spanish gold was an insult to every working man on the ship. How much is Ahab making? Probably 100 times as much as my friend Queequeg. I've got a lot of friends like Queequeg. A lot of friends like Queequeg. Coming to my rallies. And the reason is whales. Whales eat the tuna's food and become gigantic, possibly the size of small moons. And that is why I told Captain Ahab, if you elect me ship captain, I will impose a 50% blubber tax on the biggest fish monsters. And I will replace the parrots that those pirate guys wear on their shoulders with toucans. Quite frankly, parrots have been through enough, and toucans have had it too easy. I'm sorry, that's just my opinion. Later, Ahab lowered into the blinky, inky black waters on a perilous rowboat, armed with a harpoon. A lot of people give me, Ishmael, crap on being soft on harpoon control and being too cozy with harpoon rights. All I can say is that in Vermont, people love harpoons, and they use the harpoons responsibly. And so I have no further thoughts on harpoon control. To me, a much more pressing issue is that to go to whaling school, most Americans need to take out an extensive loan. And that loan has a higher interest rate than a car, which makes no sense. Free whaling school should be paid for by the federal government through estate taxes on rich dead people. And if that's not enough, we can just print more money. We can do that. We can print money. Ahab threw his harpoon straight and true, and it struck Moby Dick right in the back of his big fleshy head. Then Ahab water skied behind the white whale for several minutes and even went up in the air a few times, like in episode 91 of Happy Days, where the Fonz jumps a tiger shark. Afterwards, we all went out for Ben and Jerry's ice cream, which is delicious and equitable to its workers. The end.
Oh, wow. It's,
I think that's
thank
great.
You. Thank you very brilliant. Much. Thank you.
Yeah, this is solid Sanders.
Thank you very much. The weird thing is all of that's straight up from Moby Dick.
Really?
It's just me doing it with the Bernie Sanders accent.
I don't remember the Koch brothers being mentioned
right.
in
very,
the original.
It's very prescient.
Very, okay. very yeah. prescient. Yeah, it's quite stunning. Yeah. So what is next in the book club?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm thinking about doing a segment tomorrow called A Day in the Life of Mike Pence, where I go through his line by line, like 10-15, 10-20 type thing. I'm not sure who.
Have you thought of The Last of the Mohicans by Elizabeth Warren?
That could work.
That could work.
I've thought about maybe doing like a set of haikus by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Oh, that would be really good.
So that's something that I'm thinking about doing. Yeah. And then after that, I'm not sure. I think there's a good vibe here of taking classical literature and then imposing just a jarring political view into
now,
it.
Now, are you concerned that a vast majority of Americans, you would have to stop and say that part is Moby Dick, that part is really Melville?
Yeah, I've accepted that I'm a niche audience, Glenn. I've come around to that. I'm more of a premium performer.
Right, okay. All right. Andrew Heaton, Something's Off with Andrew Heaton is the podcast. You can find it, you know, on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. We're thrilled to have him. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.